Welcome back to The Drive with Kevin Weiss on ESPN Blacksburg, AM 1430, FM 94.1. We've got Chris Coleman from TechSideline.com in studio. And Chris, we spoke last week about this Purdue-Virginia Tech game and how it would answer a lot of questions, but seemed pretty clear. Virginia Tech dominated, and pretty good sign going forward for the fans and everybody.
Yeah, I think so. When you get to this point in the season, and I think Virginia Tech is ranked 29th in the country in offensive efficiency for the S&P Plus rankings. There's so many different metrics, but you know, if you told me at the beginning of the season that they'd be ranked 29th in efficiency after three games with a backup quarterback, I would be like, yes, give me that on a silver platter. So I'm happy with where they are right now. Obviously, there's always room for improvement, but you know, when you can go on the road and blow out a Big Ten team, even a team like Purdue, who's, let's get out of the way, they're bad.
Right.
But Virginia Tech would not have blown Purdue out last year, bad or not. So they've taken a lot of strides as far as that goes. They're now apparently they're going to blow out the teams that they should blow out. So that helps because at times they didn't even beat all the teams they should have blown out in the past. So so that's a step in the right direction, and I'm pretty pleased.
Do you think Motley performed better in this game compared to Furman, just in developing his game and reading the field better and components like that?
I do. I think he started the game better, which was key. The passes he missed early in that Furman game were those corner routes, the smash routes against cover two, and he was just late delivering those passes. And right before halftime, it actually set up the touchdown to put Tech up 24-17. Exact same route. Bucky Hodges on an out pattern, and then the inside receiver, Isaiah Ford, on a corner route, he hit it perfectly inside the 10-yard line, I believe, to set up a touchdown. So on that one play, he showed progress from his first start to his second start. So, and that's what you got to look for. You just got to look for incremental improvements from a week-to-week basis.
Now, the big question could be in a couple weeks, whenever Michael Brewer returns, I know, you know, people throwing out North Carolina State, whenever that is, and say Motley performs like he did against Purdue, keeps up his level of play and doesn't turn the ball over, do you take Motley out and put Brewer back in? I mean, what is your take on that?
I don't even know at this point. Yeah. It kind of depends on when Brewer comes back. I don't think it's going to be against NC State. I mean, all those articles we read yesterday didn't tell us anything we didn't already know. Yeah. The original prognosis was 4 to 8 weeks, and Goforth is quoted as saying, well, we hope he sticks to that 4 to 8 week timeline.
Right.
So, hey, let's write an article saying he might be back for NC State.
Got to have content out there somehow.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. I've always said it would be, I thought it would be 6 weeks or more. You just don't come back from a broken collarbone, especially being a small guy like him, who you know, has always gotten hit a lot in the past. So you don't bring him back before he's ready. You know, if it comes to that, I think it's a good problem to have, because I think Michael Brewer, you know, he's got a year under his belt. He showed in the spring that he could play. He showed before the season started that he could play. In every scrimmage, he outperformed Brendan Motley from a passing standpoint. So it stands to reason the Tech's passing game could get better when he comes back if the running game didn't. So, you know, I think it's a good problem to have. If it comes to that and you feel like you've got two good quarterbacks, it's tough to manage, but it's a good problem to have, and that's why they pay Frank Beamer and Scott Loeffler the big bucks.
Hey, Chris, going back to Purdue for a minute, how did you feel about actually seeing some Beamer ball out there again?
Yeah.
Seeing the guys just fly around a little bit more.
When you just whip a team soundly in all three phases of the game. I mean, you know, it just wasn't just the block punt. It was the two kickoff returns, and that's huge. And it's, you know, the fact that Joey Sly can go 3 or 4 for field goal and have a chance to make long field goals. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's a long-range weapon for Virginia Tech. He's not really, really accurate from beyond 50 yards yet, but he certainly can make those kicks, has those capabilities. And, you know, pressuring the ball, scoring defensive touchdowns, you know, if you can overwhelm an opponent in all three phases, I'm trying to remember, I don't know if Virginia Tech has lost a game before when they've scored on offense, defense, and special teams. I'm trying to recall. I'm sure it's happened at some point. Remember the 98 Syracuse game against Donovan McNabb and Syracuse?
Horrible pass at the left corner of the end zone.
Yeah, and I know Virginia Tech only had 150 yards of offense in that game, but they scored 26 points, and I know they had an offensive touchdown, and I'm sure they had defensive and special teams touchdowns. I just don't know if it was maybe two defensive touchdowns or two special teams touchdowns or whatever, but that would be the game that pops into my head as a possibility of the last time that happened.
What do you think about Derwan Green as a return man? When I watched him on tape, he didn't seem like have explosive electric speed, but I guess just found the open gaps and the openings in the return game and the vision downfield that allowed him to have those big returns, I guess.
Yeah, you know, I don't think he has blazing speed. I mean, I think that's fairly obvious, but he sees the hole clearly. He sets up his blocks and he hits the hole fast. You know, he was a high school quarterback. Played for a bad team out in the 757, so didn't get a lot of attention, didn't get a lot of scholarship offers, but he's used to having the ball in his hands, so that helps. I think for seven returns in his career, he's now averaging 35 yards a return. It wasn't just the Purdue game. You go back to the bowl game when he had that big return right before halftime that set up a field goal to give Tech the lead over Cincinnati. So to me, I mean, he's the number one kickoff return guy now without question.
The running back rotation, a constant question. Shane Beamer gets asked it every week. But I mean, the three guys got 10 carries. I mean, as long as they're getting the yards, as long as they get over 200 yards as a group, does it really matter if there's that, you know, 1-2 and then the third guy, as long as, you know, they just ride the hot hand, and if everybody gets 10 or 11 carries, it's fine.
Yeah, you know when it'll matter to the fans is when we lose a game.
That's true. Everybody's high right now, but yeah.
You know, I would prefer two guys, but honestly, right now, I think you just have to pick two. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think any guy has stood out over anybody else. Trayvon McMillan, I think, has a higher ceiling, but even if you look at all his carries, for the most part, they're those end-arounds.
Yeah.
Jet sweeps and
things. Yeah, I mean, Deion Newsome can run those plays. He's a wide receiver, you know, and I don't want him being one of the top two running backs, right? So Trayvon's got to show more from the actual running back position. Not to say that he can't do it, but he's still getting used to the position. I mean, he was a quarterback in high school. So it hasn't sorted itself out yet. We'll see if Shy McKenzie gets back to 100% this year. I think the main thing with him is he's not cutting well right now. I think he's got his strength back and everything like that. He's a violent runner, but I don't think he moves from side to side particularly well right now. I think it's going to continue like it has. And expecting otherwise, I think it's just an exercise in futility. It is what it is.
Moving to the defensive side of the ball for a minute, Chris, Adonis Alexander looked fantastic out there. I know we talked a little bit about him last week, but this week he really stepped up and played specially. What did you see in him this week that made that kind of difference between last week and this week out there?
It looks to me like he's got a high football IQ on that interception. You know, he wasn't even lined up in the right spot on the interception. He was supposed to be lined up towards the middle of the field to take away that throw. Instead, he's lined up on the opposite hash, which is why the quarterback threw the ball in the first place. But he read it so quickly and he flew over there so fast. So he's got a high football IQ as far as seeing things quickly, and he's an excellent open field tackler. So football IQ, really good athlete, excellent open field tackler. What else do you want from a football player, really? He's just got to gain experience at this point. He told me last night that when I asked him, why'd you slip through the cracks? Why did you only have offers from Wake Forest and Charlotte and East Carolina and Appalachian State? And he said he didn't go to camps. He went to one rival's camp, and I actually found his numbers. His numbers from that camp are on an ESPN Insider article, and he had like a 34 to 33 inch vertical jump. Might have been like a 32 and a half inch vertical jump. So he goes to that camp and he ran a 4.92 40.
Whoa.
Yeah. So he goes to this camp, the one camp he went to, didn't put up impressive numbers at all. Virginia Tech, so nobody wanted him. Virginia Tech likes his film. They bring him in. And he shows up at Tech jumping 41 and a half inches and probably running a 4.6. I mean, it's partially Virginia Tech outworking other teams, you know, Bud Foster, Torian Gray, doing their homework, looking at film. But that's also a little bit of luck that a guy shows up that more athletic than he had been just a few months earlier. I mean, that's incredible.
That's huge.
Is he one of the better true freshmen you've seen in recent memory come in right away and make an impact like he has?
You know, Kendall was the same way. Kendall and Brandon Faison were outstanding as true freshmen. And Alex, and you know, but they played corner. As far as safeties go, man, the last true freshman safety to make an impact, I'm having trouble.
Not even Cam Chancellor?
No, Cam Chancellor, he actually was a backup corner as a true freshman and then started at Rover.
And it took him a little while.
Yeah, it did.
He grew into it. Yeah. He definitely grew into it.
Yeah, I mean, he was on special teams from day one and everything like that. But, He didn't see time on the defense as a regular part of the defense until he was a sophomore.
Wow. Speaking of Cam, how nice is it to be able to see him go play this weekend?
He really needed to get to go back and play. I mean, as a leader of that football team, you know, when you're holding out like that, and then you watch the way they're struggling, he needed to. And I don't know if he came to that conclusion or somebody got to him and said, "Get your butt back on the field." But because when you think about it, he's a great football player.
Oh, yeah.
He is a great football player, but he's a strong safety. You don't have quite as much of an impact as a strong safety as you would like a corner or a defensive lineman or a linebacker or even a free safety. It's a very important position, don't get me wrong, but it's probably the least important of the back seven. So if he was a corner and he was holding out, I think he's every bit as good a football player is who's our corner? Gosh, I just saw him on TV.
Richard Sherman.
Yeah, Richard Sherman. Yeah. I think he's every bit as good a football player as Richard Sherman, but he doesn't play as important a position.
But don't you think what he does in the off the field is so important? Because he really is the heart and soul of that team.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's where I think what they were really missing. Maybe not the hits, maybe not everything else, but that heart and soul.
Yeah, I mean, he's a blue-collar guy. I mean, the background he came from, he's a blue-collar guy, and they're a blue-collar team.
Mm-hmm.
And I expect their defense to play better now. Honestly, I'm a Packers fan, so I'm
a little bit biased.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a Vikings fan, so we have
okay.
Well, I'm a Bucks fan, so I don't have.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, it doesn't. I don't even factor in at all. With Alexander, if C.J. Revis was still on the team, do you think C.J. Revis is a better player than Alexander right now? I mean, how would that play out? Because I didn't get here till July, so I don't really have that vantage point.
You know, C.J. was really good in back in spring. You know, maybe one thing you could do, if CJ was still here, you could maybe start him at free safety, and you could move Chuck Clark back to nickel or something like that.
That'd be nice.
You'd have a little more versatility, a few more options. I'm so glad Adonis Alexander enrolled when he did.
Early.
To have a chance to go through spring ball, to learn the defense and everything like that. Because, you know, I think Des Frye is a solid player. I don't think he's a bad player at all, but Virginia Tech, we're a little spoiled when it comes to our defensive backs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not used to decent play back there. We're used to very good play across the board, and we weren't quite getting that from him. We got that from Adonis Alexander. Not to say that's going to happen every week, because he's a true freshman and everything like that, but I definitely think we've got our starting rover now, no question about that.
And he could even add, I mean, he's got the frame to add 15 or 20 more pounds and still
he's
be effective.
He's going
to
be a bruiser.
Mm-hmm. He's already a great tackler. Think about how he's got pro potential written all over him. And it just goes to show you can't just look at offer list and star ratings and make a conclusion based on that.
Absolutely. You've got to understand. You've got to look at every recruit's background. I go back to James Anderson. I know you remember James Anderson. He was a freakishly athletic linebacker Tech had. I think he was part of the 2001 recruiting class. He was ranked number 26 in the state of Virginia, and I think Tech was his only offer. Mm. And he gets to Tech, and he just lights it up with his 40 time and lifts and everything like that. It took him a couple years to learn how to play football, but he ended up being a third-round pick, played a long time in the NFL. You know, if he was a recruit these days, he would go to all those camps and run for those scouts and run for coaches and everything like that, and he would have been a four-star recruit,
easily
borderline top 100, in my opinion, just based on how he ran. So those are the different challenges Virginia Tech is facing these days. They used to be able to go out and just trust their evaluation skills, which always seemed to be better than other teams. Mm-hmm. Find these under-the-radar guys, because there were so many of them, because camps didn't exist, or at least not as we know it. Not the way they are now. But the game has changed. There are fewer of those guys. They found one on Adonis Alexander, but these days you have to go head-to-head more with other big-time schools. That being said, man, I'm really, really glad Adonis Alexander slipped through the cracks, because that guy, he's a really good fit at Rover for us.
Yeah, he's the steal of the 2015 recruiting class.
Oh, no, already, no question. Yeah.
We've got more with Chris Coleman from TechSideline.com. You're listening to The Drive on ESPN Blacksburg, AM 1430, FM 94.1. Tin World, your automotive styling center in Christiansburg, provides extensive experience in the automotive industry. Style your ride with Tin World's auto styling services, including alarms, window tinting, and more. Call 251-0390. Again, 251-0390. Or stop by Tin World at 1250 Roanoke Street in Christiansburg. We've got Chris Coleman from TechSideline.com in studio. And I don't think we had a chance to speak with you about this last week, but Chris Durkin getting work at the tight end H-back role. Good move for Virginia Tech, you think?
I think so. As a third-team quarterback during the regular season, you just don't get a chance to get team reps. So much of the practices are focused on game planning for the other team. And the chances of a third-string quarterback playing in a game are extremely low. I mean, you're talking about 1%, if that. It's happened to Virginia Tech one time. In my 25 years or so watching Tech football, I've seen it happen one time where two quarterbacks got knocked out and they had to bring the third quarterback in. And that was the 2008 Florida State game when Glennon and Tyrod Taylor got knocked out. And when you're limited to 20 hours a week of preparation time, whether it be watching film or practice time or whatever, it just doesn't make sense to take reps away from the number one and number two quarterbacks to give them to the number three quarterback, because all you're doing is making those first two guys less prepared. Mm-hmm. So I think if that third quarterback, you keep him in the film room, let him do double duty film room. He can still get his throws in the drill work part of practice. But if you think he can help you at another position, then I have absolutely no issue with that at all. Besides that, I think Tech has settled on Dwayne Lawson as the quarterback of the future in the pre-Michael Brewer era, post-Michael Brewer era, or maybe the post-Brendan Miley era, whatever. Yeah. Anyway, I think they consider him their quarterback of the future, not Chris Durkin. Durkin can help somewhere else. Steiny's was in there raving about his hands yesterday. Said he catches the ball as well as anybody on the team. I'm all for that. Virginia Tech loses Ryan Malik after this year. The rumors have been around before the season started that they're going to lose Bucky Hodges, too. Mm-hmm. We'll see. I think that would be a mistake on Bucky's part. But, I got no issue with it at all. If Virginia Tech has three quarterbacks next spring, it'd be Brendan Motley, it would be Dwayne Lawson, and it would be Joshua Jackson, who's a true freshman. Mm-hmm. So you'd have two guys battling for the starting job, getting all the one and two reps, and then you'd have a guy getting his feet wet with a third team as a true freshman, and that's kind of how it should be. Ideally, you don't have any more than four scholarship quarterbacks on your roster. I think that's kind of a waste of a scholarship.
And it works out for Durkin, too, because he gets on the field or has the potential to get on a field relatively early. And following up on that with the tight ends, do you think that's a position that Tech's over-recruited a little bit, the tight end position?
Yeah, there was a couple of classes. I think they signed five tight ends over 2 years, and I think four of them were in one class. So there's only so many tight ends you can put on the field at one time. And I remember of all those tight ends, the only one that ever contributed was Ryan Malik. So they just... Not only did they bring in too many tight ends, they signed a bunch of bad tight ends to begin. Instead of giving those scholarships to natural wide receivers, which we're obviously short on right now, to their credit though, at that time they didn't know Bucky Hodges in the future was going to move to tight end and things like that. So it's very tough a lot of times to get those numbers exact the way you want to get them. No program has ever 100% streamlined as far as their needs go and as far as their depth across the board goes. But your Alabamas and your Ohio States, they make up with it with just pure talent. But those guys make mistakes, too, as far as how many of this position should I bring in this year, how many of that position. And it's not just that. It's sometimes you just can't. There might not be enough guys at one position interested in your school. You don't want to reach in and get guys that you don't think are good enough to play. I mean, Virginia Tech's had that issue in the past to a certain extent, where they didn't take enough offensive linemen, and then they complicated the matter by the ones they did take weren't any good. So you had no depth and no talent, and that's a bad double whammy right there. But I like the way this current staff is recruiting. I think I think you can it's never going to be perfect. It is a crapshoot to a certain extent, but I think you can raise your chances of being successful by recruiting smartly. Like, if you run a pro-style offense, do not try to recruit a bunch of high school quarterbacks and convert them. Recruit natural wide receivers that are used to playing the position. Make sure you get enough offensive linemen and you spread your net wide enough to get enough offensive linemen. Because, I mean, if you look at Virginia Tech's offense and you compare it to last year, it looks light years better after three games. Mm-hmm. Why? The offensive line. We can actually block someone for once, and that just makes a huge difference.
And sticking with that same theme, how have you enjoyed the depth of this team, and is it more than what you thought we would have?
It's a little more than I thought we would have. When you look at the offensive lineman, I didn't think Nijman would be this far along this quickly. I think Osterlo is further along than people think. I know they hasn't really been in games to a certain extent at this point, but I thought they'd be five deep up front, and you know, they might be seven or eight. Mm-hmm. They might be approaching seven or eight deep, and I'm not saying Stacy Searles is the best offensive line coach in the country, but I think he's one of the best five or ten. I think if you look at his track record at Texas and LSU and Georgia and the offensive linemen he's coached and how many yards those teams rushed for when he was their offensive line coach, I think you can make a strong argument for it.
Mm. How lucky were we to get him?
That he was jobless. That's insane. It's insane that a guy like that, you know, you fall into somebody like that. But you can't tell me he didn't get offers this past offseason, but I think he's a good fit here. I think he likes coaching in the staff. I think he likes coaching in this area. I mean, Stacy Searles, you talk to him, I mean, he's a country boy at heart. Mm-hmm. You know, he likes to go fishing and things like that. And, you know, he's a laid-back guy for the most part, and I think he enjoys the area. Whenever we lose him, though, I'm going to be sad to lose him because he's the best offensive line coach we've had since the 90s, man. He's top-notch.
And, Chris, looking at this matchup against ECU, how do you think the Hokies match up to them this year compared to last year?
Much better. Yeah. I think last year, Terry Williams at nose tackle for East Carolina was a monster.
Big boy.
Yeah, we didn't have the center or the guards last year. Because remember, this was before Wyatt Teller broke into the rotation last year. And it's actually been the last 2 years where Terry Williams has destroyed the Tech offensive line. And you know, now you got Eric Gallo, who's a big upgrade at center, and now you've got Wyatt Teller in there. Meanwhile, East Carolina, the interior of their defense is not nearly as good because Terry Williams isn't in there. So, yeah, I think the advantage on the inside goes to Virginia Tech this year. They don't have a lot of outside of one cornerback, they don't have much experience in the secondary. So I like Isaiah Ford and Cam Phillips there. You know, it's when you look at the advanced stats, I think Tech is 29th in offensive efficiency, and East Carolina's 80-something. And, and when you look defensively, East Carolina's 70th and Tech is 41st, I think. So it's just all the numbers and all the matchups say Virginia Tech is going to go down and win this game. Now, the intangibles are East Carolina's beaten four ACC teams in a row. East Carolina and Virginia Tech used to be the same school. Before Tech joined the Big East, they were a football independent. You know, so was East Carolina. They'd play quite a bit. They pretty much split every other game they played. The talent level was about the same. The difference in the programs right now is that Virginia Tech got into the Big East and then eventually the ACC, and East Carolina did not. And that's why I'll always respect East Carolina, because I understand where Virginia Tech came from, and we used to be East Carolina.
No, and I kind of like the fact that we do continue to play them as well.
And honestly, in a lot of years, they're better than half the ACC teams we play. So definitely. I think it prepares the team well. And the way you look at the way football is scheduled these days, you play a 1A team, or excuse me, a 1AA team every year. And now with the playoff system, you really want to play two other Power 5 teams every year. Like this year, it's Ohio State and Purdue. That only leaves one game for a non-1AA team and a non-Power 5 team. And guess what? I mean, everybody else is going to schedule like that too. So the competition for signing these series goes up. So Virginia Tech, they've basically hung their hat on East Carolina and Old Dominion for their future schedules as far as that team, that lower-level 1A team that they're going to play. And I'm okay with that because I think East Carolina gets them ready for ACC play. I think playing at Old Dominion – and playing Old Dominion in general can't hurt for recruiting in the 757. And you, I mean, it's either those schools or you go play Ohio or Miami of Ohio or a MAC school or Western Kentucky. And how does that help?
Yeah.
I know it'd be something new, but I know our fans are complaining about scheduling a lot recently. But if we start scoring 50 points a game again, no, people aren't going to care who we're playing. Yeah, they're just going to be glad that we're entertaining to watch again. That's the most important thing.
And looking at ECU's offense, I don't see Shane Carden. I don't see the Hardy kid. I don't see Cam Worthy.
Nah.
And I don't see that coordinator on the sidelines, Lincoln Riley. I think that sets up for Virginia Tech's defense pretty well.
I think it does, too. I think, you know, everybody talks about the game last year, but the exact same Tech defense and the exact same East Carolina offense met in 2013 in Greenville, and the Tech defense annihilated them, held them to 13 points, shut down those receivers completely, Carden threw three interceptions. Last year was an aberration. I mean, it really was. I mean, he sat there and threw up a bunch of bombs, and they caught like three or four of them and won the game. He completed less than 50% of his passes. Ohio State did the same thing the week before. They just threw a bunch of bombs, and they didn't catch. Ohio State's receivers didn't catch any of them, and East Carolina's did. That's kind of the way I look at it. Brandon Faison, could have you played better? Sure, blah blah blah. But when you think about it, I think if Tech played East Carolina again last year and they have the same game plan and throw up a bunch of bombs, I think Tech will win the game if they played it again. So I think the how East Carolina won, it's not a fluke that East Carolina wins games because they have a lot of talent. It's not a fluke that they beat Virginia Tech, but how they won that game, no, come on. You're just throwing bombs. You're throwing prayers up in the air, and their prayers got answered a few times, and they happened to win the game because our offense was abysmal for the first half.
Yes, it was.
And I don't think that will be the case this year.
Well, Chris, we appreciate the time once again, and we'll see you next week, all right?
Sounds good. Thanks,
man. Thank you, Chris.